Welcome back to Label, the stories, rumors, and legends of Tooth & Nail Records. I'm your host, Matt Carter, and I hope you guys all had a great Christmas and a new year. I spent mine doing some deep thinking and reflecting and, you know, the time off from the podcast and all that. I really enjoy that, so thank you for giving me the extended absence here. But during that time, I was feeling really grateful for this podcast and the opportunity that, you know, it affords me to explore interesting minds and the groups of them that we call bands to learn from, because I get a lot out of it. And the more I explore, the more I feel there's something very special about the way independent bands self-organize and navigate the world and overcome their struggles, particularly in this Tooth & Nail world where faith is a component of it. It seems to me like music is one of, if not the most powerful force for connecting people, and the wisdom that's embedded in our shared faith and spiritual tradition seems to really enable a higher level of emotional depth and guidance. And the way that all works together is just fascinating. Today's episode's a good example of that, but it also makes me curious to learn more about bands that are adjacent to our scene and how they've navigated their way and how they've struggled in similar and different ways. So as we go into 2023, I'm planning on doing more episodes than the previous years. So I'm not quite ready to move to weekly just yet, but I do plan on doing the regular amount of episodes featuring the Tooth & Nail artists, because there's so many more I want to talk to. But I'm also going to add additional episodes between those and in the off weeks and venture further out. So start thinking of who would be interesting and let me know in the Facebook group and I'll add them to the list that I have going, but I've got some really good ideas. You're going to love this conversation with Matt Baird. I have a ton of respect for creators that can find a way to do what they love long term, and it's quite rare. And over the years, I've met so many Spoken fans that tell me how much they love the band and how cool Matt is. And despite having very similar long-term paths, I've spent very little time around Matt personally and the band. It's been well over a decade since I've seen them, and I was really glad to have the chance for this exchange. All right, let's do it. Well, I'm really glad to get the chance to connect because there's so much fascinating stuff filling in the gap, because we have not really spent much time together. But if you really zoom out and think about the bands Emery and Spoken, if you just described them from the outside in, I mean, it's really similar descriptions of exactly what kind of band it is and what style and what era and what type of venues and what type of culture and type of, I mean, you know, just our bands. I think of Emery's a band that did a lot in, you know, between churches and clubs kind of a thing. And Spoken did that too. And we just haven't spent a ton of time in the same shows, tours or, and limited festivals and stuff like that. So I know we've had a lot of parallel experiences and a lot of different experiences over the same time period, both with a lot of longevity. So it just feels like there's a lot for me that I'm curious to try to connect about the experience you've had doing what you've been doing as long as you've been doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. We've been in the same spot a lot over the years, yep. But there hasn't been this like, oh yeah, totally, we know each other. Oh yeah, I'll call him up. Yeah, we can talk. Right. It's none of that. With none of, I mean, I did one acoustic show with one of you guys. It might have been you. I don't know.
It wouldn't have been me. It would have been Toby or Devin, probably. But yeah,
it was Devin. Yep.
Yeah, it would have been Devin
in Illinois. It was crazy. I remember it was really good. I didn't know what to expect. I don't think anybody ever knows what to expect when it's bands our style of music doing acoustic shows. They do now, but back then, I mean, that was 15 years ago, and they're like, wait, acoustic, how does that even work? And yeah. Obviously you have to tweak some stuff. You have to do things a little differently. You're not going to be up there with an acoustic screaming your lungs out. But I think that's where people think they're like, oh yeah, totally. They're like, I'm going to see Norma Jean acoustic. No, you're not. You're not going to see that.
It's a different thing, but there's this, you know, I really think this is just another thing that our bands are similar in, but the way that you sing and that your style comes from such an aggressive place, but it is literally not really hardcore music or anything, allows it to actually translate directly to acoustic with just tweaks in a way that a fundamentally hardcore type band that even though cannot do. Meanwhile, a band like Spoken can be insanely heavy, aggressive, screaming, break. It can still have all of that stuff in the high energy, and it can be just translated into other realms because of the whatever that fundamental thing is in song based versus like band based hardcore music, that fine line there. You know, you can see what side of that you're on. It really gives you this nice versatility.
Yeah, like, I mean, deep down, I mean, I think we just want to be a riff rock band because we like riffs so much. And I love listening to bands that probably that people wouldn't expect, you know, us to listen to, but just, I mean, like, there's just some really good riffs out there. That's all I'm saying. And I like choruses too, though, but I like really aggressive drums. I love country music. I love pop music. I love worship music. I love all of it. So it's like, how do we somehow cram all that into, oh, that's a spoken song.
What connects all that you just say? Is there, I mean, it doesn't, because there doesn't have to be a connection, but is there a connection to what you, that is in common about all of those? The country, the worship, the aggressive drums, the song, you know, whatever that is.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's just something that grabs you, and it's normally, you know, the hook of a song, or it's,
they all have maybe hooks.
Yeah.
They're all hook-based things.
Yep. I mean, country music, now everyone talks about country pop, whatever, like, I don't like, but even if you look back at George Strait, early Tim McGraw, Garth Brooks, you know, Don Williams, all those artists, it's really catchy stuff. Like, they, you might not want to sing about what they're singing about, but it sticks with you. That's why George Strait is one of the biggest artists of all time, you know? And then you look at the same thing with U2. Like, it's just really, really catchy. And luckily U2, you know, they have great lyrics. They have great music. And, you know, I don't know them, but they seem like super nice guys. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. I like your philosophy. It really is kind of grounding for me to separate music that's written as heavy and then music that's written lighter that can be set have, you know, in different things, as if you could get, if you could sit around and write a song on acoustic, it could become a U2 song or a spoken song, and be set either way. That's really useful. And then it's not pure song based because the riff is this other thing where it's not, you know, like you differentiate riff and choruses, and that's fascinating too, because you can do heavy music that's less or more riff, but the riff is that real bridge to heavy music that makes, that really gives you a freedom. That's really nice. But I mean, to me, when I think of spoken, I just hear the chorus to Promise. It just comes in my head.
Oh, that's so funny.
That's just what it is to me. Like, spoken, I'm hearing it. It's right there.
That's crazy of how that song came together in 20 minutes, and we like, it's just one of those where it's not like we had a little bit of time left before, and this was before we took off driving to Canada to record with Garth Richardson for our first Tooth & Nail record.
Wow.
And we had like 20 minutes, and Jeff, our guitar player, like, he, you know, Jeff and I were there from the beginning, and he's like, well, I mean, we got like a few minutes. I've got this guitar idea, whatever. And it was the intro riff of A Promise. And we're like, okay. And so we just kind of threw some stuff together, and I loosely based the lyrics off of Jeff working at Subway and how much he hated working at Subway. And, you know, it was just, I couldn't believe he worked at Subway. He hated it, but yet he needed a job. Wow. And it was walking distance from where we lived as a band. Like, three of us lived in the same house, and we practiced in the living room. And you know,
what year are we? I'm totally in the
moment. I don't know, 2000, 2001.
Okay. Yeah,
something like that.
Working at Subway, living together, and that's the ingredients. Pardon the pun, for the song is like, there's a riff. It's just coming to me so clear. It's the riff,
yeah.
And then the content was the Subway thing, and
yeah.
Then a chorus emerges. I mean, that when it winds up being, you know, the hook.
Yeah, yeah. You're trying to kind of console and comfort your friend who hates his job, and it's all in this 20 minutes before we wrap up practice, pack up, and drive two separate vehicles to Canada from Northwest Arkansas. And that was And so it was really weird because one kind of strange thing is, I had like this verse that was an alternate of one of the verses that we had in Promise, because they're not difficult lyrics. They're not, and nothing about the song is difficult, but, I almost tried to record them. But I'm like, you know what? I don't think so. Anyway, literally, I mean, no time later, Juliana Theory came out with a record. It was a love record, I think.
Right.
And it's like, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. At least that's what they say, something like that. And I'm like, oh, I'm so glad I didn't use those lyrics, because a much more prominent and successful and better band came out with lyrics that they would think I ripped off, you know, where I'm like, what in the world? Because I love the Juliana Theory Emotion is Dead record. I loved it. But I didn't know I was about to rip off a band that probably hadn't even recorded the song yet. And then fast forward 20 years and Kelly Clarkson comes out with a song that has the same lyrics. What doesn't kill you makes you stronger, you know?
Well, that's a really popular idea. I'm not surprised it emerges over and over again everywhere. But it's a, and that's why it's good, though. It's like, that's why it's culturally resonant. And that's what Promise is about. I mean, things will get better, but you have to, I mean, the sentiment is still there about you're in a tough spot. And and there's, you have to reckon with the fact that things are not as they seem. They should be.
Yeah.
Either way.
Totally. Yeah.
So, that, I mean, that, and then this is why, I don't know, but I don't know that, I never even thought about what the song's about or anything. I know that one. I know it. Like, when I, how, you know what I mean? For whatever reason, I just know that song. So it penetrated into me is the point. But is that a popular one for y'all that is like the old one that you had to play? Do you have to play it last? Is it that kind of thing? Because you have bigger songs on Spotify and stuff. It's just.
Yeah, we still play it. It's not a fun song to sing. I mean, obviously it's pretty up there. But you know, we still play it, still sing it, still, you know, dread the choruses, you know? But yeah, people ask about it at every show, which is a great thing. That's a great thing that people want to hear a song, you know, but they also, people are constantly like, hey, play David, play this path, play Forevermore. And those are like, that's the record right before our Tooth and Nail, you know, our Tooth and Nail chapter of our lives. And, but they still ask for that, where I'm like, we haven't played those songs in literally, I mean, easily 20 years, maybe 18, 20 years. But yeah, they ask about it, and they ask about Through It All. They, you know, now they're asking about newer songs that we released during COVID too, which is great. That's a great thing. Cause we haven't played those 1,000 times each yet.
That's an amazing feeling to be able to have a song that's new and then have it be known about out there and then get out there and play it and say, oh, this one's actually come alive. It's real. It's now being, in a place where people know it and it's new. That's a great feeling. So I'm happy to hear that. And you've had some really great success in streaming and stuff, you know, over this really long period of time and in different points. And so all that's amazing, but let's focus in on this, like you just mentioned, that transition into becoming a Tooth and Nail band, because you guys were, as far as I understand, the way I observe it is that you're in the 90s and stuff. Like, so you're really early here into and coming from what a lot of us come from, which is this weird time of new metal-ish rap rock emergence. That's what is this? And, you know, riffs to whatever, this access to this really aggressive music that connects, that we, I don't know where we were, we're all in that stew somewhere, but I'm curious how you get from wherever that was in this late 90s thing up to this, you know, Tooth and Nail signing of, you know, on 2003 when that record comes out.
Yeah, which it's crazy. When I think back of when I was 19 years old and, you know, the other guys were still, they're finishing up their last month of high school, right? And so we had started, you know, playing shows. In the beginning, every band, you have this thing of like, let's start a band. Okay, what are you going to play? Well, I mean, I'll play drums. I'll play guitar. Do you have drums? No. I mean, but we can, you know, we went through that whole situation, luckily, before we started Spoken. So we had already had to sift through who's going to do what thing. And then we started playing like these people's houses and their porch and backyard and their garage. And we were playing at that point, we were playing like, two original songs and a Rage Against the Machine cover called Tire Me, where it's like, Tire Me is a great song. Like, it's not an easy song, but we're like, oh, let's do this. And so we love.
So what year is that? I'm sorry if I missed it, but I just like to be calibrated.
I would say, I mean, that was, the band started in 1996. So that's when, that was when we were listening to Rage Against the Machine and we were traveling long distances to go see shows, you know, to go see Rage Against the Machine. So for us, it started, you know, 1996, where we were playing, you know, people's garages, their back porch, their lawn, any opportunity that we could play something, that's what we wanted to do. And we had two songs that we had written kind of sort of that were okay. At least their structure was okay to play, you know, I'm not saying they were good. So two original songs and Tire Me by Rage Against the Machine. That was kind of where it started. And we're like, we were listening to Rage Against the Machine, Downset, 311, all these bands. Of course, Metallica, Petra, Stephen Curtis Chapman, like all these bands that we were just trying to figure out, what are we doing? But Rage Against the Machine was definitely an influence in a major way, because we're like, listen to this. Listen to how enormous this band sounds as a four-piece band. We had to have a conversation of band name, because we were playing shows and we were calling ourselves a band, but we had no band name. And so we're like, okay, Deftones is the best name ever. It's already taken. Limp Bizkit is a really dumb name, but it works for them. And then we're like, Korn is spelled with a K and a backwards R. we could call ourselves anything we want, you know? And so our drummer is like, how about, we want to be outspoken about our faith. How about spoken? We're like, done. It was a 2-minute conversation at 2 a.m. after we played someone's garage, you know? So we're like, well, we have a name now. So let's move forward. Yeah.
But I mean, the wow for me in that becomes so, it's just so fascinating. It's like when you're in tune with things, that things just happen like that. But your DNA includes, like what he said there was never escaped, that you'd be associated with your faith like that. Do you know what I mean? Like it's going, that there it is. And then good luck. But you know, you're not that it's bad or good or anything. I'm just saying it's a moment of, you know, obvious clarity, but I guess it seems perfect. It's just available information that both caps, you know, I don't know, just is. It just works. It's weird how that happens. But that's, a throwaway kind of thing, but that is the kind of the trajectory from there.
Yeah. Yeah. It was like, what matters to us? What are we doing? What are we about? You know, and it has to be something that's, it has to be bigger than just music, because we're like a bunch of kids that were, you know, working odd jobs and trying to figure out if we're going to community college or whatever. By the way, I was in community college and not doing well. So to start a band was like, thank you, Jesus. Like it was truly the most amazing thing ever. But it was something that we're like, what do we want to hold on to forever, you know? And so we're like, cool, let's play some rock and roll and let's tell people about, you know, the hope of Jesus. Yeah. And that's what simple. It has been. Yeah.
Yeah. So simple.
Yeah. Start a band. Yeah. It is easy to start.
Like, what are the two things I like the most? Well, you know, Jesus, you know, riffs. So there you go. What else?
Jesus and riffs. That's all we need.
And then the rest is just downhill from there. That's it.
That's so good. Jesus and riffs.
It's just, you know, what are our values?
I said is, yep.
Companies struggle to ever arrive at their values, you know, like people who want to start businesses and do things. They're like, what is our mission? What are we about? What are we trying to do to the world to make a world a better? It's like, oh, well, that's just, there's a simple approach.
It's so true. It's so true. I love that. That needs to be a t-shirt. Somebody needs to make that shirt.
You have a band name and a trajectory. And so you roll through to the first album, Echoes. What is it called? Echoes of the Spirit?
Echoes of the Spirit Still Dwell.
Spirit Still Dwell. Right, right.
Yep. Yeah. So we did, you know, our first record was in 97 called On Your Feet, which at that point we had already written, you know, several songs, and the label Metro One Records picked, they basically picked 14 of the songs that we had, and they were more of the rap rock genre. And you know, a little piece of the story that a lot of people haven't heard, and I didn't realize a lot of people hadn't heard, but when we started sending out press kits, back when you would actually send like a manila envelope with a black and white 8x10, a cassette tape, and, you know, something typed out about, you know, where you're from, whatever, a press kit. We sent stuff to like 5 Minute Walk, Rescue Records, hadn't heard of Metro One Records, but our dream was to be on Tooth and Nail, you know? So we're like, oh, let's send stuff to Tooth and Nail. And I don't know, we probably waited a couple months, and I think I had a 7 Ball magazine or an HM magazine, and I was like, oh, here's the mail room at Tooth and Nail. I'm going to call them. I'm just going to see. I don't know. And so I called, and someone answered, and was like, Tooth and Nail. I was like, hey there, my name is Matt. I'm with a band called Spoken. We sent a press kit a while back. I was just kind of curious if you guys, you know, have you had a chance to listen? If we like it, we'll call you. And that was it. I'm like, awesome. I'm like, cool.
Awesome.
So, I'm like, well, I don't know who that was, but if they like it, they'll call us. That's what I told the guys. I'm like, if they like it, they'll call. I was so naive. I'm like, they're never going to hear it. Like, it's not. And anyway, so we, you know, we're waiting around trying to figure out what was going on. We're still playing shows regionally. And this is all over the course of 9 months, right? From the beginning of the band to now. And I remember calling Rescue Records out of San Diego, and I talked to a guy named Noah, and he's like, hey, I like what I hear. The thing is, like, we're currently trying to launch my son's band. He's in a band that's the same genre of music. They have a record coming out here pretty soon. And so that's kind of where our focus is. But, you know, I would like to, you know, send your stuff up the coast to Newport Beach. There's a label called Metro One, and I know they're looking to sign, you know, bands of this genre. I'm like, that's amazing. Yes. And so, it was Noah, you know, it was Wolf's dad from POD who was like, yeah, we're going to launch my son's band. And it was when they came out with Snuff the Punk. And I remember going, to Noah's Ark in the Northwest Arkansas Mall. And I think Jeff, our guitar player who I grew up with, I think he actually paid for it, but he bought it on CD, and we're like, this is amazing. And we had never heard them, but Wolf's dad is who actually got us connected with Metro One, who did our first three records.
Wow. And they put out POD?
Yeah, they put out...
I don't even know the whole history, but that's amazing.
Snuff the Punk, Brown, yeah. And yeah. Right. Yeah, it was okay. Really, really crazy.
And that's what year? I'm sorry. That's so cool. This is just before I was tuned in to everything.
97.
It's all fuzzy. That's amazing.
I guess it's 97.
I was still behind the curve at that point, but that's amazing to hear what it was like. Because I don't know. That's fascinating stuff.
Yeah,
so,
we didn't.
So
we
then
didn't
you
know
do that record with Metro One, and then still another step to Tooth and Nail. How does that step go?
Contact with Tooth and Nail? We did three records with Metro One. We had signed a 4-album deal. Again, 19 years old, no clue what's going on. We're like, yes. So we're in a record deal. This is amazing. And we're like, we were talking about how once we finally talked to someone at Metro One, he's like, yeah, I would like to see about you guys coming out, you know, and recording a record. We're like, we'll leave tonight. Like, I mean, we were like so ready to go because we had just wrapped up a rehearsal, because that's when we had the opportunity to rehearse like a real band. Every Monday and Wednesday night, we were in the living room jamming like a band. Like, it was really cool. And so they're like, well, no, I mean, you don't have to leave tonight. I mean, let's figure out, you know, a month from now or whatever. Because again, some of the guys hadn't graduated high school yet. Anyway, we went out on the porch and tallied up our money. We had $140 between the five of us, because we would have made it to like the western side of Oklahoma. We wouldn't have made it at all. And so we did three records there. We were supposed to do a fourth. But I, you know, I was basically begging the label to please release us. And that was a whole other story. That's a whole other chapter of, you know, whatever. But anyway, they released us from our last option. And so we were independent for over a year and a half. We were talking to Goatee Records. Chad Johnson was, Chad is who did the very first actual spoken show ever at a place called The Hub that he started at John Brown University in Siloam Springs, Arkansas. And so, which we had known Chad for a while because he used to come, Chad and Ted and these other people, they would come from John Brown and they would volunteer at our youth group. Like, and so I've known Chad literally since I was 16 years old. And so, you know, Chad had started working at Tooth & Nail and we were talking a bit. We almost signed to Goatee, but, you know, bands on Tooth & Nail had started to pave the way of both markets, Christian and general market, that we were like, that's what we want to do.
That's it.
That's, you know,
there's the gravity toward that. That's it.
Yep.
That's cool. Yeah.
Yeah. And so Chad was like, well, I mean, you're coming to Tom Fest. Let's talk. And so here's the thing that always drove me crazy because I didn't know until Brandon Ebel told me face to face, right? Mm-hmm. So we had been struggling to try to figure out how to remain a band over the first three records, how to tour nonstop as an absolute nobody. We couldn't find anyone to take us on tour. It was near impossible, all this stuff. And we get to Tom Fest there in Stevenson, Washington, mm-hmm. and we're walking over towards the barn area where bands played, and it was Chad and Brandon. 2000 and
what is that, two?
Yeah, probably right around there.
I'm pretty sure I was there. Yep. 2002, really? I was there for sure. Yeah, we were a local band at that time at that Tom Fest. We would have been
crazy.
A local that got to play somewhere, you know. That's
so cool.
Who else played that at Tom Fest, if you remember?
Dave Zaker played because Sam stuck his kick pedal through the kick head on the first song, I think.
Wow.
And so we kind of all just were waiting on Dave Zaker because we're like, yes, you know. Dave Zaker was one of those bands that took me a little while for it to click, but once it clicked, I'm like, mm-hmm. I love this band so much. I remember vividly, I was driving through the desert in Eastern California listening to Absolutes on cassette tape, and it made sense. I'm like, this is it. Because Mark's voice is an acquired taste, and it that night, I remember it vividly, driving our 82 Ford van that was about to break down on every mile, and
it just clicked.
It did, and I'm like, I love this band. And so, Dave Zaker played. I don't really remember. I think Spyglass Blue maybe played. Tragedy Ann played. But we're walking over towards one of the barns and talking to Chad about it. And Brandon's like, you know, I actually tried to buy you guys out of your last record. I'm like, what? He's like, yeah, I loved Echoes. I'm like, what? I had no clue. I had no clue he had ever even heard our band because I always had in my mind, yep, if we like it, we'll call you. And I never heard anything from Tooth & Nail.
Yeah, that's fascinating.
Yeah,
because that was a time when Brandon, these aren't his words. I'm just saying it's pretty obvious that in that time period, he really understood the value that existed that was yet to be, you know, harvested and put forth in 2002. He is a fan. I mean, he listens to music. He has some special way of listening that's only his or whatever, but he uses his ears to evaluate music. I mean, that's what he does. So his competitors, you better believe he's heard who these fans are, who's might be doing what that he might want to acquire, or, you know, he's tuned into that. And at that time, he would have been hyper tuned in. I mean, you know, that's how he's, you know, these are just my words, but that's part of his success.
Yeah.
It's not surprising from my point of view.
Yeah. That's what we wanted. We always wanted to be on Tooth & Nail. And when he said that, it was like a moment. I'm like, wait, you want us on your label? Like, it was so awesome. Never forget it. I mean, I'll never forget it. And I wasn't 19 then. Like, I was at least, 21? I was an adult. And to hear that, because we had worked really, really hard. We had toured a lot up until that point. And when he said that, and the fact that Chad Johnson had been there from the very beginning, and he was like, yeah, let's keep talking. Let's talk. And so eventually it turned into a deal with Tooth & Nail, and it's what we had dreamed of.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. So now there's a path divergence that comes next. I'm just going to say it from my perspective and then let you take it from there. But so you come up in this DIY system of, when you say you've done a lot of touring from, you know, across the 90s and these 2000s, I know what that level of touring is like in the same, you know, rough period of time. I have a good grip on that. And it was a lot of just, it was very DIY, and you would just hustle and get this, and it might be a church here, it might be a rural place, there's a church to play, whatever the things were to do. They were cool, they were underground-like, they were real, but they were in a lot of bizarre places, just however to make it happen. And you get with Tooth & Nail, and then what happens next from is you're trying to be in that gap to be, you know, as you are, you said it before, I don't want to put my language on it, but what is it about being, how do you frame church and mainstream, the two market, how do you say, I just don't want to put words in your mouth, but what do you see as the chasm between the Christian world and the mainstream world? How do you, what language do you use?
Well, I mean, I remember when we, you know, our experience was a lot of churches who would equip us to, they would actually pay us something, you know, mm-hmm. And whether it be their youth group or whatever, they would bring people that showed interest in what we were doing. And like, they're like, hey, this is so awesome. You guys are doing what you're doing. And, you know, most of them, they understood that, hey, we're probably going to go play a hole-in-the-wall bar tomorrow night, mm-hmm. and we'll probably make $20. So you're equipping us. You're feeding us right now. You're giving us a place to stay. You know, you're helping us, because a lot of the churches understood that we were like missionaries for that were going out from their church, you know, and they got it, you know. And I'm still in contact with a lot of those people who at that point, maybe they attended the show, then became a youth pastor or a pastor or whatever. And I'm still in contact with them, you know, even now. And so they understood that it was not easy to do what we were doing. It wasn't easy to be out on the road for 2 months straight. And, you know, some weeks you'd have 3 days off in a row, you know, where it's like, wait, what are we doing? And you're sleeping in a van at a Walmart. That's what you're doing. Like, there's nothing glamorous about it. Sometimes you could stay with someone for more than one day, but then you feel like, am I overstaying my welcome? What's going on? Sometimes you could sleep in the sanctuary of a church or the basement of a church.
Yes.
But,
and if they, if you don't mind me interjecting, there's something really crazy about it that's hard for me to access in my mind now because of the lack of connectivity and communication and the internet, obviously, and stuff. It wasn't, you would have 3 days off and you would like play in a river for 3 days as grown men. Like, there wouldn't be anything to do that you could ever do other than just maybe try to get into a dollar movie and just do goofy stuff like you are still a child. I don't know what everybody's saying.
Yeah, no, that's it. There's a lot of sitting around, or maybe if, I remember one time we had a day off and we had played a show in Florida. You mentioned Florida earlier. And we stayed with these people out in the middle of nothing. And so one of the nights, the second night that we stayed there, we all decided to go walking down this dark dirt road in Florida, right? And I remember one of the guys we were with just disappeared. You hear this splash and we're like, what is going on? He had caught the eyes of a little alligator with his flashlight and he decided to jump in and tackle it. And so we look down there and this guy's got a hold of an alligator. He's got his hands around the mouth and like, I'm taking this home.
We're
like,
no way.
What are you doing? Like, that probably made me really dislike Florida because I didn't realize there were alligators in the ditches where we're at.
Who did that? Who wrestled the gator?
This random kid that was, we stayed at his parents' house.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I guess he was used to it, but there's just so many of those things where, you know, sometimes you're glad that you were able to kill time. But other times you're like, we got to get out of here. So many times we're like, let's leave now. And we would leave in the middle of the night.
Go.
No, we would just take off driving and hopefully
nobody needs you anywhere. You're not, you're just out there. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. And so like, it was one of those things where we did that a lot. Like we would just try to play. We would show up at a venue and ask if we could just play two songs at the beginning of a show. Right. I remember the first band that ever actually took us on tour was Disciple, and we were playing at in Evansville, Indiana, at a place called The Rev. It's the basement of this church. And we didn't know who was playing, but we were booked on that show. And we played, and then this three-piece metal band basically gets up there. And at the end of their set, the bass player, who was also the singer, just spun circles. I mean, the whole, they just were trash can ringing out the end of it forever. And his 50-foot cable turned into like a ball the size of, literally a volleyball. Just it wadded up his cable. And then they just hit one big hit and they were done. I'm like, who is this? This is amazing. And they came up and they're like, so where are you guys headed? We're like, we literally had a week of shows canceled. So I don't know. We're probably just going to hang out. And they're like, well, why don't you come with us? We're going to go play two shows in Maryland and two shows in Pennsylvania. You're more than welcome to come play. And we're like, wait, what? So we did. We took off and we followed them to Pennsylvania from Evansville, Indiana. And every time I pass this certain travel oasis on I-76 through Pennsylvania, I think of them, like, because that's where amazing. We stopped for gas. And yeah,
such
we did
memories. So but you can't get those again. You can't go. You can't get that memory of that way the cable wrapped up again, like you could at that time. You know what I mean? I don't know how to describe that, but
yeah,
that's amazing. And so at that time, where y'all do, what was the amount of outspokenness that was coming off stage that was, and how core, like, where was that part of your band and how did that interface going, you know, where, take me on the path that includes your faith, the venues, what crossing over would or wouldn't have been, and what the path that has unfolded that you're still here doing it is just so much to fill in there. And I know we don't have time to do it all, but you know,
it was, it's a lot of trial and error of trying to figure out how do we communicate what it is that we actually want to communicate, because we truly believe, yes, we love music, we love traveling, we love going to our favorite places to eat, you know, like on the road that we can only get there. And by that, I mean Sheetz. Sheetz is literally my favorite place to eat. And so we would route tours out to Sheetz, you know, and like, where can we play? And so we would spend a lot of time in Pennsylvania, you know, just because at that point they hadn't branched all the way down to like South Carolina and over to Ohio. But like it was something where there are some nights maybe you felt like you might have said a little more than maybe you should have, where you're kind of like, are they trailing off? Are they not? And we were never like a preaching band. It was never like, hey, we're going to play a slow song now and I'm going to talk for 10 minutes. It was never that. But I mean, I think we kind of, it took us a few years, but I think we got it to where we understood that as long as we mention the name of Jesus, there's really not a lot more that we could do on stage. Like, we carry ourselves in a respectful manner, play our songs the best we possibly can, try to connect with the people in the crowd, try to be kind to the bartender, the sound guy, the volunteers at the church, the kids that came to the show, the parents that came to pick up, whoever, like, try to be as respectful as possible, but to know that we could literally talk to someone about Jesus for an hour, but if they're not receptive to the fact that Jesus could be real, you're tuned out. They're done. They have no care of what you're saying. So we got to a point of where, whether we were playing a bar or a church or a youth rally or anything, it's like, hey, we believe in Jesus Christ, that he's the Son of God and the Savior of this world. We love you. Thank you for being here. That's it. That is absolutely it. That's 3 seconds. And everything else should take place off stage, at the merch table, in the catering room, in the parking lot on a skateboard or with a basketball, or talking about video games that I know nothing about. But yet, if that's what a kid wants to talk about, let's talk about, you know, video games. Let's talk about school. Let's talk about whatever. And so it took a lot of years, and it's still something that I think we're still figuring out of, how do we be the most effective and the most non-threatening? Because we all know plenty of human beings that they open their mouth and you're like, I really wish I never talked to them in my life. we didn't want to be that, you know?
Okay. So you're totally right, because I'm trying to navigate this in the sense that we come from the obviously exact same place, and then Emory has the different trajectory than Spoken, and in some ways I'm just saying it plainly that your standards in that way probably has some dictates your trajectory in some ways that you didn't compromise on, that had certain effects instead of other effects. And we were wrestling with all the same questions and stuff. And what does it mean? How do you boil it down? How do I walk the walk? And what is that? So, you know, every single same bit of that. And then every band's kind of dealt with it differently. But for sure, as we were trying to get away from the Christian scene, we weren't trying to do that thing at all. Well, we were, but at some point we realized we didn't even want to hold on to that. And we did want to really push into the real. How far could we really get to the real scene that's outside of that entirely? And that was always super hard. I mean, like, I don't even know what we did or what that was, but it's the bands on the outside there, they really were afraid of if Emery comes here, if Spoken comes here, they are going to be the horrible people that we are most annoyed by and never want to talk to. And we cannot let them come over here at our shows. That was 100% the attitude that there was. Like, yeah, that, what you're saying, that negative stereotype, yeah, for very good reason, they all really did think that is who we were if they let us be the opener, even though we were selling lots of records and a good band. And they were like, you can play this show, but you have to promise you're not going to like that. You know, we were getting that kind of thing at that yeah, same time.
Yeah. And, you know, the cool thing is like, we've never really had someone tell us like, hey, if you're going to talk about Jesus, you're not doing this tour, or if could you tone it down tonight? I don't know that I've ever heard someone say that. And I think maybe it's just because it's like we're easy to work with. And I think they're like, cool, yeah, whatever. There have been bands that we've toured with in the past where they've kind of, after our set and after, you know, I do mention Jesus, they make sure to let their fans know they do not believe the same thing that
exactly.
we believe.
Yeah, it's yeah. so awesome. I
yeah,
love that.
Yeah. The they're best. Like, we better make sure our fans know that that's not us. And
that's
I
so
see
cool.
that. I see that as kind of flattering, you know. Where it's
it
like,
is flattering.
Because you
respect.
Just got... Yeah, you got to play for their fans. You know they're not your fans. They don't
right.
even know who you are. So you're just thankful they're there. And I think if anything people could say is like, man, Spoken says thank you way too much from stage. It's so annoying. Like all they do is say thank you. Thank you. Thank you for being here. Thank you for still being in the room. Thank you for making the choice to be here, because you could have been anywhere else. You could be playing video games, which is deep down what all these guys want to be doing anyway, is playing video games, but they're at the show. And it's like, I mean it like every time, and I don't take it for granted any opportunity when we're playing a show and there's anyone in the room. Like,
right.
I'm grateful, you know, I'm grateful that they're there.
And so it really does boil down to you are doing that thing on stage that makes other people react, is that you are going to let it be known. Like, you see the way I act here, whatever, you judge me any way you want to. Just want you to know, this is me. This is what I'm just saying it. I'm not.
Yeah.
That's it. I'm just that. Like, that is what it all boils down to. It's such an elegant solution, but it also really does stamp you in a way that others must reckon with. And that's like, it's a punk thing to do. So you then are that band, like, oh, because they can even feel, like, I don't know, I'm just saying it. The audience and everybody can feel that as like, okay, well, he's putting that out there. How do we all feel about it? That's a bold thing to say here or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's just so exciting. And then another band might respond. Like, we've had so many situations where it's known that we're a Christian band or we said something, and then the other band said, just say crazy stuff, or, you know, like a hardcore vegan band, and they're saying, they make up stuff or lie about something, like feudy kind of stuff, but it's not, it's in good faith or whatever. It's kind of for fun, but poking at each other and trying to, like, that meta game is going on about what is this all about here or whatever. I like that interplay in a place. Or we have a band that's telling stories. They were like, one band was like making up a song about how we were doing cocaine with hookers in the alley and by their set, you know, just like, but it's like a game or something, because we talked about Jesus from stage earlier.
Yeah.
Stuff
yeah.
like that. Yeah.
It is really weird. And, you know, and I know a lot of people, they're always saying, they ask you about our peers and like these people in bands who have decided, hey, I don't want to talk about Jesus anymore. I don't want to follow Jesus in my own life. Therefore, why would I want to talk about Jesus from stage? Like, mm-hmm. people are constantly asking about it. I'm like, hey, I don't know what people are going through. I don't get a chance to talk to each of these people one-on-one, because that's where it would start. It wouldn't be like a blanket statement about, you know, obviously if a band used to proclaim Jesus and now they absolutely do not, and make sure you know they do not, something happened to make them be like, what do we, for them to reevaluate, or for them to, and I'm not talking deconstruct. I'm not saying that. That's too big of a debate that I don't get. But something happened, whether it be heartbreak or some sort of dishonesty, or it could be business, it could be band members, it could be, you know, whatever. Something made them want to not follow it anymore. And I don't know. It's their thing. I'm not in control of their eternity. You know, I want to love them, whoever they are, whatever band they are. I'll play shows with them. I don't care. You know, but just when people are like, why didn't you guys just strictly try to go mainstream, or why do you guys still talk about Jesus from stage? Because that should be our life. Like, it's our life. This is just, music is, obviously we put too much stock in music sometimes, because I find myself, you know, and I'm guilty of doing, you know, far more to make sure I can play music than certain things in my life. And that's not a good thing, but like, it is it's a juggle. It's really hard. But I want to use music to tell people about Jesus, and it could be gone tomorrow. And I know that I could wake up tomorrow and not be able to talk, let alone sing, you know, or drive. So yeah. I want to finish strong when it comes to music, and hopefully, you know, Jesus makes it extremely clear when he's done, because we've all had every reason in the world to quit, you know, like every reason in the world to quit, except for God himself being like, hey, stop, what are you doing? And I believe that someday he will be like, hey, seriously, thank you for what you've done with music, now do this for me. And that's great. I'm about it, you know, whenever that is. But I know that I wouldn't be able to do anything to do with touring or songwriting or anything if it wasn't for my family and my wife being the voice of reason in my life. And she's just smarter. She's smarter. She's better. She's the best person I know. And so when she's like, hey, I support you, you know, do what you're supposed to do. Just get it done. It's like, what? Yeah. What? That's amazing.
It is. That the whole thing is really amazing. It's really amazing. And it really just, it really makes me feel like it's what the air that you're in there, because the question becomes, how did you not ever change when everybody else did over time? Like, everybody else, there were this and then there were that, but then they deconstructed and there's this person. But like the steadiness of this to still be there, it's very clear that that's remained from the beginning to there and is still here since, you know, the very beginning, and that it seems very steady. And it's, you know, it's obvious, you use the word supposed to, it's obviously in the territory of calling. I mean, you've got this thing that you're most, that you care the most about in a pure way, and you've been able to maintain it sustainably at one level as a calling. I mean, I think that's why the word calling sticks out to me, because it's like people get into stuff when it rises and they get out when it goes down. I don't know. That's what normal people do when they're trying to get something or do something or move through their life. But some people have a calling, I guess, you know, and that's just what is it making me, that's just what the words seem like to me that you're talking about.
Yeah. And it's been called that, you know, over the years. Like, it's a calling. It's somewhere I do feel like, you know, when I was questioning, what am I supposed to be doing with my life? And I've said it a lot of times to a lot of people, like, I would continually be like, God, what am I supposed to do with my life? What am I supposed to do with my life? And then one day I realized I kept saying my. So, God, what can I do for you with my whole life? And then it's like, oh, start a rock band, tell people I love them, have a plan for their life. That's at 19 years old. That's the coolest thing I could ever hear from my creators. Like, hey, start a rock band, tell people I love them. And so that's what it has been. And, you know, again, I there's been every reason in the world to quit. Like, I've been without any band members more than once, you know, where it's like, I'm like, it's just me. And there have been those conversations with Jesus. I'm like, what? what are you doing? Like, what am I supposed to do? Like, I mean, is this your way of me being done? But I don't feel done. I don't feel like that I'm supposed to be done. So you're going to have to figure this out. And that's when conversations start happening and people start talking about, well, I know this guy. There's this guy. How about this guy? Have you thought of this guy? And that's how the band has continued because of one, I'm too ignorant to quit, apparently. Or It's just like maybe God really does still have a plan. Maybe it is still effective. Maybe we are still current. Maybe the same thing that was true when I was 19 is still true now when I'm 46 and I want to use music as a way to tell people that Jesus loves them. And, you know, it is so difficult because the juggle is so hard when it comes to touring. How do you keep a band? How do you stay on the road? And then you have family, and how do you make family first? And I'm so bad at it so often because I get so easily distracted with, you know, who else do I need to call? Do I need to take care of this? What's going on? And, you know, here we are with recording a new record and I'm gone to do this. And it's bouncing back and forth between acoustic shows, spoken shows, recording a record, you know, trying to somehow be involved with family schedule, with, you know, church schedule, with all that. And I just love being around my family. I love my wife. I love my kids. I like being around them. And I am trying to juggle it. And sometimes I'm really bad at it. I really fail at it.
Wow. It's some people would say something like, oh, how convenient. You just talk to God and he tells you to do heavy music for him and just whatever. But that's because we live in this age of, like, I guess the emergence of the grifters and the influencers and stuff like that. And, or the bad pastors or people that just, you know, they have their thing while they get, why they're supposed to do it. And this story about how God told, you know, it's just, it's so manipulated for purposes so often. But if you've been doing it since you're 19 till you're 46, despite, you know, in that sustainable way, it's like, why is it so crazy that God would call you to that when it's the number one thing you would want? And he made you to be interested in the things you're interested in. And
yeah,
like, it's just like, that doesn't sound that crazy, does it?
Yeah.
Like, where's the, you know, so I just, anyway, that is fascinating because lots of people like music or try to have, and some people try to have a career. So I guess that's what the other side is. How do you actually balance that and think about business now that, like, how do you, that's when you got music and that faith thing, both that are not going to be compromised. How can you also put commercialism in? I don't know, like, to keep all three of those are very distorting forces, I find. So what's been your interface with commercial, you know, the business, the money, that being that part of it, that's a whole nother force.
Yeah, a lot of mistakes on what's going on. Like, where's money? Where should it be spent? What's beneficial? You know, what is wasted money? And our band, like, there's been a lot of guys over the years have made some major sacrifices when it comes to money, of not getting paid at all. I mean, for a whole tour, they're like, well, I really don't have that many bills. So, you know, put it towards your bills or van repairs or gas or merch or whatever. There's been some guys in the band that have made some major sacrifices. And, you know, it was very, I don't know, generous of them to do that, because it's like they're doing that whole thing of like, I'm going to help financially equip the band to keep doing what the band is doing by not taking a paycheck, you know. And it was really crazy, and there's no way to ever let those guys know how grateful I am or anyone who is in the band now, because their sacrifice made it to where the band could still be a band now. And so, and every person who's ever been in the band throughout from the beginning, at that certain point, you know, whether or not they left on good terms or bad terms, or they were asked to leave, or it's because they had a lifestyle change that needed to come off the road, they all played a part in building the foundation of where this band is now. And so they all deserve credit. I'm not saying that some of them weren't really frustrating and it was a relief when they stepped away, because that's part of it. That's part of a job, whether it be at Walmart or at a gas station or at a church. There are sometimes when there are things that are starting to poison the water well and they need to be cut out, you know, and then they can go do what it is that, you know, maybe they really wanted to do, but they're kind of tired of touring, but yet they just had kind of a bad attitude. And you're like, what's going on? What's going on? Nothing. Well, something's going on. I don't understand.
That's
why.
Fascinating.
So, but all of them played a part, you know, all of them helped write songs. All of them, you know, did some driving occasionally. All of them helped load gear. All of them, you know, some of them, some of their sacrifices were much larger than others.
That feels like that stuff you're talking about there feels very near purpose to me. Like that seems like really kind of fundamental, probably built into your purpose is for the spoken, the entity to be this thing where other people come in and interact with or are refined by, like there's something that goes on there in shaping people.
Yeah.
And being a conduit for some transition in their life or something. And other bands are that way too. I find Emery to be that way. There's another band I work with, King's Kaleidoscope. That's like the internal function of this band being a band, regardless of who's around it or in the crew or in the band or whatever, it's a connected thing that has its own stability that you kind of can discover yourself in. I know that sounds a little wonky, but does that fit?
Yeah, I think so. I think because once you join a band or you become, even if it's a hired gun who's like, hey, I want to stick around for a while, you become part of it. Therefore, you are involved in decision-making because like, hey, what do you think of this? Because it's great. And that's one of the reasons Spoken has existed for so long is people coming with new ideas, younger people.
Right.
I mean, right now, it's the youngest guys. I like started all over again. I mean, there's a guy that's playing guitar right now. He's 20 years old, a drummer that's 25. And then JR's 27, you know, I'm 46. So it's like, yeah, get, you know, younger, better players than you could ever have. And
that changes
them,
the DNA,
you know?
And it influences the DNA, and they may move on or whatever, but the DNA stays in some way. It's something that the thing is spoken is bigger than a person. It's not just your band.
Yeah.
And it's like this micro community that you get processed by being a part of that process. Like it,
totally.
There's something a 27-year-old or a new, you know, something you get out of it at every, whatever your interface with it is. And it somehow is stable across how many years? 25 years? I mean, that's in
27
like something
years.
Is stable February across 27 stands. Years. That's not just you, a singer, dude. It's more than that. But anyway, that stuff's fascinating to me.
Yeah,
that's like really, that like, is that's not the public purpose. That's not the, oh, we're supposed to make money from our family. We're supposed to talk about Jesus to people. We're supposed to play music we like. But the thing that happens internal, that's a lot of value created. Like doing the work together with people, even if the people change or the crew or the, you know, whatever, the refining that happens there is big time stuff.
Yeah. And I mean, it's not only for the people that come in and they're here for a while and then they're gone or however it is, but for myself as well, like I learn a lot from these guys. I'm not saying I'm not severely stubborn because I am, like it's it to a fault. Right. But I think in some ways it's a good thing. Some ways it's a bad thing. When it comes to change, it's terrible because you don't change. Like things that need to change, you don't because you're stubborn.
You can't.
Yeah. And so it's like really, it's a daily battle, you know, in your mind and your heart of like what matters, you know, and it's like, Matt, get out of the way. Don't be in your own way. You need to fix things. You need to change. Quit being the same way, you know, but like, also, it's like you have these people that come in the band for whatever season it is, for a record, two records, three records, four records, whatever it is. And you learn so much. Sometimes it's things of what not to do again. And sometimes it's things like, oh, that's really cool. We can apply this to the future. And I believe that that's the same way with any walk of life. Anyone can relate to that. Like, wow, I learned a lot.
Yeah, yep. Way of life. That's what. That's the thing. Yep. It's like a cohesive way of life will change you if you enter it. Whatever. That's cool. That's cool. Is there things that just did not happen that you were like? What's the regret that this never happened for us and we deserve this? We didn't get this, or like we had hoped this one path but didn't. You know, if you have some big some big thing like that that you overcome or never happened or something like that?
I think there might be moments where you're like, oh man, that would have been really cool if that had happened. And it's kind of a disappointment where it's like, ah, that's a bummer it didn't happen. But we learned on our first tour ever, like, right? First tour ever, you can never have expectations of what should happen, what's going to happen. You're not in control of it. You're rolling into this town, you're playing a show and you're leaving. You have no control over promotion. You have no control over who's coming to the show, who, you know, none of that stuff. So it's like people can say they're taking care of it, but you don't know until you show up. And so we learned very early on to never have expectations. If you show up and it's the promoter and, you know, two kids and there's somebody there, you play a show the same way you would for 500 people. It's always been that way. Sometimes it's really, really awkward. And you really would, in that moment, you're like, I wish I was somewhere else. But somehow, at the end of the night, while you're driving off and you're having those conversations, once you get back in the van, you're like, can you believe that? Like, there's something positive. Yeah. Or it's a funny story or whatever. Like, there's something to be taken away from it. It's not always, wow, that was a train wreck, right? Wow, can you believe that? Because that's when people start putting blame on someone, you know, like whether it be the promoter, whether it be booking, whether it be management, whether it be whoever, people love blaming other people for why a show wasn't successful. Or maybe the fact that, you know, there's some huge band playing two blocks away from your band at the same time, that maybe that's what it is. I remember one night in Carthage, Missouri, we were about to play a show and it was really dumb because it was one of the nights, that may be the night that our drummer forgot his kick drum 2 hours away in Arkansas in the practice space. He didn't bring his kick drum. So he's like, hey, I'm going to run and get the kick drum. We're like, wait, what? And he took off out of the parking lot back 2 hours home to go get this kick drum. And we're like, why didn't he just borrow a kick drum? I don't understand. Anyway, we're waiting around for him to show back up. And I look down the street and there's literally 200 people, 200 teenagers standing outside this building. I'm like, what is that? They're like, oh, it's the movie theater. I'm like, what's going on? It's like, well, the new Harry Potter is coming out tonight. We could literally see 200 kids in front of us going into a movie. And we played for 15 people that night. They were like, how could this have been different? Well, it'd have been great if we didn't play a block away from a Harry Potter release, which is dumb to say, but it was true. There wasn't that many kids that lived in Carthage, Missouri. If there was nothing going
on, maybe
they could have been like, oh, let's go to that show. But that was, it just is hard. Never have expectations. That's the whole thing. It doesn't mean don't hope for cool things to happen. But if those things don't happen, don't be like, it's your fault. Like, it could have been 10 things that made it to where it didn't happen. Therefore, it's like, oh, well, maybe next time, let's keep going. And I think that's what keeps you from becoming bitter and agitated at everyone in your circle. When you're like, well, oh, I don't know. Because we've worked with several different management companies, several different booking agents over the years. And I know that some of them worked really, really hard to try to make something happen. But someone on the other side, the other band management booking, like, well, we went with this other band. And it's not our manager's fault. I understand that. You're a little bummed out. We're like, ah, that's a bummer. Well, okay. Well, that didn't work. What are we doing now? But so often people are like, you said that was going to happen. Where I think in a lot of situations, if we're like, hey, I'm going to do the best I can. I mean, I'm literally going to exhaust every resource because I want this for you as much as you want it for you, because it's going to be great. But if it doesn't happen, let's don't go, you know, putting blame on whoever. Let's see what's next. Let's do something else. Let's book a solo tour. You know, let's just, you guys go out and play with some locals, you know. But I think that's another part of like, how have we existed? We don't take ourselves too seriously and we know that it could be gone tomorrow.
Well, there's a lot of things in there. There's that rigid kind of integrity and some commitment to just a personal ethic that just like you say also as I'm stubborn and it causes me problems. But there's a rigidness to something you know that is how you operate. And that's cool to have the self-knowledge of it in that. And to avoid bitterness, regret, resentment, jealousy, those things tear bands apart. It doesn't sound like that's present with you.
Yeah, I mean, I might have given it, you know, 2 seconds thought at some given moment. You know, we have taken a lot of bands on tour, and we have seen a lot of bands.
I know this story. Yeah,
and we have seen a lot of bands blow up right after. You know, not because of our tour. Because they're a great band and they released a great record and they're a great performer. And I'll go ahead and say, so, like, when I remember when Bruce Fitzhugh hit me up, he's like, "Hey, you guys have some shows coming up?" I'm like, "Yeah, we got some shows." He's like, "Will you take a band called Sent by Ravens on tour?" I'm like, "Who's that?" I'm like, "Well, it's this band I'm kind of working with, whatever." I'm like, "Sure, whatever." It was so hard to play after Sent by Ravens every night because they are incredible. Like, what have we done to ourselves? You know, we're like, they're up there, Zach singing A New Fire. I'm like, no way. Why didn't we get to write that song? You know, The Becoming, they looked the part. Their first record was the most amazing thing ever. We're like, what in the world? And John Dunn from Tooth and Nail, he's like, "Hey, I got this band. They got a record coming out. A tour they were supposed to be on fell through. Could you take them out?" And we're like, "Who is it?" It's like, "They're called The Becoming." I'm like, "Sure. Yeah, we'll take them." And again, every night, I think we only gave them like 5 shows because that's all we had during that time frame. And we paid them pennies. Like, I think one night, maybe we gave them $75. And they're like, "Thanks so much, man. Thanks." I'm like, "You guys are so good." Like, I just wanted to tell them every night, it's so hard to play after you because you guys are so good. And, you know, the last, there's 100 of them, but like this band full of these kids, and, you know, one of them put his guitar strap through his belt loop and he was always, you know, bent over, head towards the ground. They sound like Deftones, and I loved it so much. And we toured with them, and they called themselves Ludacris. And the next summer, they came out as Norma Jean and completely changed their style of music. I'm like, "Wait, you guys don't sound like Deftones anymore." I'm like, "What?" Obviously, it's not a bad thing that they changed their style. And I love Norma Jean so much. And I just, you got to see that band turn into something. And you can only be happy. You're like, "This is amazing." It's so cool to have been a small part of even being able to see that. But it's been really cool. I mean, there's been some bands that we've taken out on tour and probably never talked to again, you know, just they weren't quite, they didn't really get it. Like, "Wait, what? You guys do this constantly?" I'm like, "Yeah, it's really cool, isn't it?"
Yeah, there it is. That's it. Yeah, that's it. It's like, "Wait," but because to a lot of people, it's a pathway to this. And then if we don't blow up or have that breakout thing, that spot, like whatever that spike where the hype is, where crypto goes or where the new genre breaks or whatever the thing is, that's all good if you can catch those waves. That's great. Whatever. But the thing you do is just this very simple thing that you like, that you know you like to do it. So that's different than the people that intersect for different reasons at different times.
it's there's so many elements of what we do as a band that is so foreign to so many people. I remember, I'm not going to say the name of the band, whatever, even though they wouldn't care, but like we were on this tour with these two bands that were, they're not Christian bands. Like one of them kind of dabbled in it in the beginning, whatever, but like, so we don't drink on tour. I don't drink at all. Don't care. Don't want it. Whatever. And this guy, he played guitar in this band. He always had a mixed drink in his hand and a cigarette in the other, right? Like always. Didn't matter. Mm-hmm. And so one night he scared me to death because I was in the van. It was starting to get dark. We were about to go in and play, and I was returning text messages about shows. I was trying to book some of the off days of this tour, even with a day's notice. I'm like, "We got to play somewhere. Let's play somewhere. We're out here. Let's not waste an opportunity." And so like I'm texting and I see this shadow in front of me. I'm like, "Whoa, what in the world?" He's like, "Hey." I'm like, "What are you doing?" He's like, "How?" I mean, he was so puzzled. Like he was like, "How'd you find, you know, 4 dudes to go on tour and play bars and not drink?" I'm like, "What?" He's like, "How'd you find a bunch of dudes that don't drink?" I'm like,
"Go to a bar every night with people that don't drink."
I'm like, he was so puzzled by it. I'm like,
"It's a good puzzle."
Yeah. I said, "Well, It's like, I use this analogy a lot. I'm like, well, you think of Walmart, okay?
Good observation.
You're going to be a greeter at Walmart. They tell you, you can't stand at the front door as a greeter and smoke a cigarette. Okay. If you have a problem with that, you're not going to take that job. You're not going to be like, what? I can't stand here and smoke a cigarette. What are you doing? So you're just like, oh, whatever. I'll go somewhere else. I'll look somewhere else. It's the same way. It's like, there's been too many issues in the past of things that have happened and gray areas that just got destroyed. And I'm like, there's a no tolerance. Like, that's it. And he's like, oh, okay. I'm like, if a person would rather drink every night or do whatever than to just get up there and play some rock and roll and go without drinking on tour, they should probably tour with someone else. He's like, oh, all right. But he literally was just like, the look on his face, like, how'd you find four dudes? It was so hard for him. And I'm like, man, I don't know, man. I just...
Well, that's mystery might be a little profound, is all, because it's like, that does, you know, I'm not saying that's me. I wouldn't do it, but there's a reason.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's so many things.
That's a good observation by him.
Yeah. Yeah. He's like, I don't get it, man. I'm like, mm-hmm. Well, that's cool. But it's like, it, we all have the choice to do what it is that we feel like we want to do. And that's at all areas of life, at all
ages. That's where I like.
You can choose. You can do this or you can't. It's up to you. Because if we do something that's going to cause a poor consequence, we have to deal with that consequence. And all of us have our own things. Like, whatever it is, we all like, ugh, I knew better. Why did I do that? And we all deal with it. We all have to live through it. And that sucks. And sometimes it's painful. Sometimes it is not a quick process. Sometimes it's annoying. And we're normally annoyed with ourselves.
Yeah, I guess that's a grown-up thing. But I mean, like, it's not about, like, I'm resonate with you so much. It's not about the drink or don't drink. It's about the ownership.
Yeah.
It's just the ownership of a situation. However, you're going to have to take ownership of it. So this is like making that decision and or whatever the decisions are to be made with the eyes open, you make them and then that's what you do. Like that, that part is very cool. So that's neat.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, there's so many elements of all of it where some people, they are okay with it. Some people are not. And that's fine. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't, it's not a big deal. The same way as if someone does not believe in Jesus, I'm still cool hanging out with them. Still cool having a conversation. Still, I want to hear what they have to say. You know, like that whole thing of like when we walk up, it's like, hey, how you doing? Oh, good, man. How are you? It's a deflection immediately. Good. How are you? Most of us are not good. We're not. Oh, man. Good. How are you? Man, I'm just so good. What about yourself? We turn it immediately. And so often we don't want to hear what they have to say anyway. So we
I don't tell people when they ask because I don't believe they're genuinely asking.
Yep. And that's a problem.
You know what I mean? So the question wasn't a genuine one. Trust me, you don't want the answer. I'll let it fly. I'm ready. Really want it.
Yeah. Yeah. We're like, how are you? Do you really want to know? Well, I wouldn't ask.
Good or bad. I've got material, I can tell you. But I don't think that's what you're really asking.
you don't have time, man. What? You don't have time.
That's a good way to put it.
With this, with Labeled Podcast, what made you decide, like, hey, I'm doing this?
I just like doing it. I mean, what have I learned a lot? I mean, just I've extracted a tremendous amount of wisdom in the last 90 minutes. So I'm good. I'm good to go. So I'll do it again tomorrow with somebody else. If I could do this again tomorrow, I will. What else would I want to? I mean, that's how it is to me.
That's awesome.
You know, you have this experience. All I got to do is look at you from my point of view, and the shared experience is there. So it's really easy for me to, you know, loot your past 20 years for wisdom.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's right there. So I appreciate you sharing it. That's the way I see it. I just process the world by talking. That's what I do. I talk. If I'm not podcasting, I'm on the phone talking to people about stuff. I mean, it's just what I do. So it's just a discipline in a way. But I just feel that there's much to learn by reflection for the people that have been involved in these kind of really weird cooperative little things that are these little groups like bands that operate independently as kids with almost no guidance and they figure stuff out and they have no plan, but they do some, they have something and stuff happens and it seems really important. And how do they all figure it out? How does this work? What did we learn from all these little, it just seems like there's a lot of interesting information about how these little groups are configured and what makes them go and what they've learned. I don't know. Seems interesting.
Well, I've heard people talk about, you know, you and this podcast a lot, especially recently. People value it. They get what you're saying, knowledge. They get so much from it. So many of them are just, they're intrigued because they grew up listening to the bands that you are interviewing and the people that you're interviewing and the things that you're learning, they're learning at the same time. Like, I didn't know that. That's crazy. I wondered, you know, I always wondered how that came about. And it's really cool because as of literally 2 weeks ago, I would have never even thought about like, hey, I'm gonna hit Matt Carter. I'm gonna see about doing the podcast because I don't seek them out because they stress me out. Like I'm like, because afterwards you always go thinking about what did I say? What could I have said differently? I wish I hadn't said that. Oh no, did you know? And so it's like, it's really hard. But I think there's so many pages of this spoken situation that people have never heard, they've never thought of. And you know, some of it you don't want to relive, some of it you don't want to talk about, some of it's better left, you know, buried. But I don't know. I appreciate what you're doing because people love it.
I appreciate that. I mean, if it resonates, I'll keep doing it. No worries. But there's lots to do, but it just seems worth doing is the way I would put it. What do you see going forward? Because I think it's highly likely you'll still, I understand you're the kind of guy that if you get the calling changes, you'll follow it. But on the other hand, it seems highly likely you'll be doing this in another maybe 10 or 20. What do you look forward to? What do you think's out there to achieve or do?
You know, it's so hard because I've been asked that for years upon years. How much longer do you think you're going to do this? I'm like, well, one, it's pretty aggressive vocals. I don't know that I could do it forever, you know? And I always look at it, it's like, I'm not John Schlitt from Petra. That dude's amazing. Like, that's not me. But I would love to do it until I'm dead here on this earth. I mean, I'd love to be able to do rock and roll. I would love to be able to perform. I'd love to be able to see people's face when you get to a certain part of a song and you see their reaction and you're able to have conversations with them afterwards, whatever. But at the same time, like if it's leading worship at a church, great, because I love that as well. If it's doing acoustic tours with just my family and myself and us being in our Honda Pilot, you know, going around the country, great. I love it. I truly enjoy it because it's just VH1 storytellers, you know, and I get to talk about the stuff that we're talking about, you know, not as in depth, but I love it. And so, you know, right now it's, you know, finish the spoken record, which I'll be recording vocals this evening. I'll be done with vocals on Tuesday for album number 10, you know? And so that's that. I mean, I think that's a pretty big milestone of like, okay, great, cool. But you know, I'm going to record another worship record soon. We're looking to tour as much as we can in 2023. Going to Europe in June on an acoustic tour, planning on going back to Europe in October with spoken. And then, you know, just kind of keep going. Like until it's where it's like, hey, no one cares anymore. You know, it's like, hey, will you stop? Like until that situation. But, I don't know. I don't know that anyone can actually be like, here's what I'm doing tomorrow. No. We can't.
You're not that kind of guy. Anyway, you already said that earlier in the interview that you're not supposed to have expectations.
Yep.
So
yep.
I'm asking you, what are your expectations? And you say, remember, we don't have them. That's not literally what the exchange is, but that's two sides of a coin. But is there something about the landscape or the environment or the system or the way things are that's broken or wrong? Or is there something that would be better for this whole world if something were different? Or do you see something unfolding with technology that's going to be disruptive, good or bad?
I think it's hard because I don't have a real grasp on streaming. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I have a Spotify account, but I've forgotten my password 50 times, you know, like I listen to songs on YouTube. I love channel surfing. I want to hear music. I want to consume music. I want to purchase music if it's available. you know, I want to be a part of the music community. I want to play music. I want to write music. I just want to be present, you know, and I think so often I get so wrapped up in task and doing things and maybe busy work that I don't know that I'm moving forward the way I need to be moving forward. So it's just, I think something that is broken currently, if I were to speak of music, if I were to speak of the touring that your band has done, my band has done, a lot of our peers, like, if you can think back to the 90s and into the 2000s, we all used to be able to go on tour and there'd be local bands that would be there and they would be just greenhorns. They would be in the way. They would have no clue what they're doing. They would tear down their, they take off their cymbals off their stands while they're still on stage. They would like coil up their cables while they're standing on stage. Where it's like, hey, we need there to be more bands that are like, I want to be in a band. My dream is to tour. And like you have these bands that they can be taught by bands like us, where we can take them on tour like we used to be able to do. And I'm talking, this stopped before COVID. It wasn't like, oh, COVID broke up all the local bands. That's not that. To be able to take these bands out and to put them through a month of like hands on, like, here's what you need to be doing different. Teaching, you know, mentoring. And to be able, because that's one of the things that I miss so much that we used to do all the time. We would take out these bands and you would teach them something and they would go home a better band, or they would go home and break up.
That Aaron Gillespie's got the same tirade. You and him would have the same, on the same wavelength with that. He's frustrated that A&R guys and labels and people aren't taking these artists that are new and really spending the time to develop them, as opposed to just try to commercialize them on their first thing or whatever it is.
Yep.
You know what I mean? It's like there's the development process that is missing. If the on the ground scene has become more digital, there's actually not people really being developed. That's a very great point. I'm glad you made it.
Yeah. I miss it. You know, I miss those conversations with these guys who are like, they're hungry to learn how to do what it is that we've been doing for so long. And that's like, how do you mentally wrap your mind around,
like, carpenter?
Get out here, learn something. I'll be your apprentice, you know, like whatever. Get out here and let's figure out, how do we stay in a van together for 10, 12 hours a day? You stop only to get gas and go to the bathroom, jump back in, you get to this venue. You have no clue what you're walking into. You only know the few details that you've been told, and you walk in. How do you interact with a sound guy who may or may not know what he's doing? How do you interact with a promoter who immediately is like, oh man, I didn't realize there's eight other things going on in town tonight? How do you interact with these kids that are standing there staring at you so awkwardly? They have no clue what to say to you, but they want to say something. And you're like, hey, what's up? They're like, you doing all right? Where are you from? What do you do? You know, how do we all do this together? Because that's, it's missing. It's just, I miss it. I miss having these bands that you're like, wow. Like, you give them, you drill them every night for 2 weeks of like, don't do this. Don't do this. You need to do this more. Your stage presence really needs some work. Hey, don't stand there and do that. Oh, you know what? It's not those kids' fault that there's not more kids here. Like, just perform for them. Cool to them. Let them have a great time. And when they leave, they're like, dude, I watched them play tonight and they went crazy for eight of us. You know, like, it's just, I miss those times of where there's just more interaction. There's more interaction with people. People didn't allow, if we're looking
more
at the
interaction,
COVID.
More connection. Yep. Yes. Yeah. Okay. That is what's missing. I think that's just a beautiful answer to that. I mean, I'm curious, but that's definitely got to be part of it. The music's about connection. It's about connecting or whatever. It just seems kind of obvious. And so there's a lot of digital and virtualness that is hard. You won't be able to articulate exactly what's missing, but think you're.
I think if we're able to add elements back in, it'll become, you know, a little more normal. Or like, you have these kids who they've never been able to stand there and have a conversation with a guy in a band that they've listened to for, you know, whether it be they, I've never heard of you guys until this week. I've been listening to you on Spotify. Hear that so often where it's like, wow, that is so cool. You're 18 years old. You've never heard our band, but
you
know all these other bands that, you know, we've toured with, or we're the same genre of music, or you know, we show up on the same playlist. And like, man, I haven't heard of you until this week.
So that's where the discovery is. It's digital first. Like, you used to get discovered in a physical place. Now the discovery happens out there, and it's yet to be realized physically. So that's still like there's this demand for your band that's new that isn't even related to physicality yet. And to me, that's exciting. That's exciting.
Yeah, because all of it.
It is yet to be. There's so many people all over the world that have heard our band recently that never did before, somehow, because of the it's able to be more, you know, there's is more possibility for that, and it's yet to be figured out how we'll ever get to be in physical space together. That's all.
That's
pretty exciting.
And how do we do that? We tour. We tour like a real band, like we used to. We go on tour and we deal with it. And we, you know, we crash at a Walmart that doesn't stay open past 11 p.m. anymore, which drives me crazy. Someone has to bring Walmart back to 24 hours for bands on tour.
They've
we need
done
it.
A lot.
We They've need
done
it.
A lot.
But yeah, they really have. The Waltons have really supported touring bands.
Lot. They really have. They could have cracked. I mean, they do like literally allow RVs and crazy buses and all kind of bullshit in their parking lots, and they don't run you off. I mean, it's
amazing. Love it. I love it. Except Tucson. Yeah, Tucson doesn't let you sleep in their parking lot.
Yeah, the few fancy ones don't either. That's right.
Yeah, but yeah, I don't know. Well, what about you guys? What are you doing touring wise? Do you have any tours coming up? What's happening?
Yeah, this year's good for us. We have we're doing some festivals that'll get announced soon, and then we're doing our album In Shallow Seas We Sail. You know, play like a celebration of that. As a headline set all year, we're going to go to all the main places that we can, and we're trying to figure that out for the second half of the year and do that in as many markets as we can, and just take that act, you know, an act based on that record, and then go get out there and tour it. So
that's cool.
Yeah, we got a lot of we're cranking. We're in a smooth place and got plenty to do. So I feel very great at this moment. There's ups and there's downs right now. Feels like good opportunity in lots of areas, and you know, keep on trucking. But I don't have, you know, it's just full speed ahead for me. I don't have any other thoughts on what to do.
That's really cool. That's great.
So Matt, this has been great connecting. I'm so glad we got the opportunity to do it. And I know you're on your way to the studio right now. And if you had to pull over, I'm sorry. But thank you for pulling over
internet
connection to be good. But this has been a terrific episode. So thanks.
Well, I appreciate it. Thanks for taking the time. Again, I appreciate what you're doing. I have a really hard time with, I want to listen to music. If I'm listening to someone talk, I just tune them out. And I don't know. Maybe this is different. Maybe it's different. Maybe the fact that it's my language, you know, the interviews that you're doing with people, it is, you know, I've listened to a lot of Ryan Stevenson's podcast because he's talking to musicians. He's talking to people that more of the contemporary worship artists that I'm like, dude, that is so cool. That's where that song came from. That's what they lived through. That's whatever, you know? And so, I'll have to start listening to labeled podcasts. I got to tell you.
I appreciate it.
I think you do
find
great.
Some you like, some you don't.
You do great at interviewing. So, you opened my eyes. Thank you.
Who is that? Brandon? Who did you just say? Brandon Stevenson?
Ryan Stevenson.
Ryan Stevenson.
Weathering the Storm podcast.
Okay.
Torn Wells has one as well. The High Note. It's really good. Like he interviews like Steph Curry and Derek Carr. Like he does more sports stuff. But it's really cool to hear these different people's journey of really, really hard times. I mean, they live through tragedy. They live through like all of it. It's just, it's great stories, you know, and it's real things. And I think so often we forget that miracles can still happen. We forget that people can still live through really hard times and still find joy, you know? And I think that's where we're at with music. It's like, how do we still find joy in what it is that we love to do? And, I still love it. That's the thing. And, you know, and one of the things, I don't even know if this will be on, I don't know if this will make it on the podcast, or whatever, but recently I saw someone, it was when Jacob King, actually, he's one of the pastors, the children's pastors at our church. He had mentioned labeled podcasts, whatever. And I went on there and I just kind of looked and someone had posted something. They're like, I don't know if the gist is, this isn't word for word, but I don't know if Matt would do that because Spoken's experience with Tooth and Nail wasn't good. And so like immediately I'm like, wait, what? I don't know who they talked to. I don't know how that was misconstrued. I don't know whatever. But Tooth and Nail did exactly what Tooth and Nail said they were going to do for our band. Like we did three records. That was our deal. That's what we signed. That's what we wanted to do. And it was a major, it was a turning point in our life. It was a turning point in our career. We were able to go and record A Moment of Imperfect Clarity with Garth Richardson, who did the first Rage Against the Machine, which is why we started, you know, playing that style of music, right? So learned a ton there. And then we did two records with Travis Wyrick, where it's like, Travis is a wizard. Like, he put us through the ringer. He worked us to death. Like, in every way, we were a better band because of the work that Travis put us through and just wearing us out. And we had to kind of figure out how to get built back up, you know, drums, guitar, bass, vocals, everything. And through all that, we learned how to be better songwriters, which is still something that is still, it's still in motion. We're still trying to be better songwriters, you know? And so our experience with Tooth and Nail was not bad. Our experience with Tooth and Nail was exactly what it should have been. And that was it. I mean, obviously when a band is like, okay, so, and I remember John talked to me. He's like, hey, this is your last record. You want to talk about renegotiating? I was like, well, we did three on the first record label, three on Tooth and Nail. We're going to just kind of see where it goes. And that's what we did. Like, it wasn't somewhere was like, wow, what a poor departure. I can't believe this, you know?
Right.
We loved being on Tooth and Nail, and it was really cool for us. It was really great. And yeah, all of it was good.
And for sure, we'll keep that in the interview. I mean, yeah, we're just wrapping up here, but I appreciate you saying that. But yeah, there's all kind of stuff you'll see of, you know, people have a lot of speculation about many, many things, and it's hard to even know. But yeah, I appreciate you saying that. You know, people like that type of insight if you have it. People are always, it's like, who cares about drama? But it's fascinating. It's like fights between bands and labels. That's fun. Those are fun rumors and fun things to talk about and part of every relationship.
Yeah.
Sometimes they get blown out of proportion is all.
I think that with the experience that I've had, the conversations that I've had with people, when it comes to the bands who may have been on Tooth and Nail or Solid State or whatever, the bands that talk the most in a negative context are the bands that signed a deal and then didn't tour and just complained about, why doesn't the label put us on tour? It's because it's not the label's job to put you on tour. Like, that's what a booking agent is for. That's what management is for. That's what you being a band is for. It's like, tour. That's it. A label's job is to market your band and help you grow your band or your brand or whatever it is. And so I know a lot of the bands that were terrible when it came to talking, whether they came back to Tooth and Nail or not, or however that worked out, they didn't tour. That's why they complained all the time. They didn't work. And so it's like, what are we going to do? Well, I guess we just complain.
You got to blame somebody when things aren't actually working, period. Yeah. So it's that's always there too. So
yeah, I mean, this is all work. That's it. Like, it's all work. Mm-hmm. It's never going to be easy. It shouldn't be easy. It's always a refining situation, and how do we somehow become better? And in the end, if we can become better people, you know, and I really would like to be a better husband, a better father, a better friend, a better band member, a better songwriter, a better performer, a better singer, all those things. I want to be better at those things. I just want to make sure that I myself get out of the way so that I can be better. That change can happen.
Amazing.
Yet another day. catching up to you.